I'm going to be talking about a new approach to quantum gases with applications to cold atoms, specifically in the so-called unitary limit, although it's more general, but I'll be focusing on this particular physical situation. So the outline is first, I don't think everybody here is familiar with these quantum gases in the unitary limit. What exactly does that mean? It might ring a bell if I mention that it's the crossover point between both Bose-Einstein condensation and strongly coupled BCS superconductivity. It's a nice RG flow, nice RG properties, et cetera. So the way we're going to tackle this problem is a strongly coupled problem, and some new methods are needed. So I'll explain that in some detail. So we developed a new formalism, not necessarily to solve that problem. It was kind of a very formal question at the beginning. It was is there something like a thermodynamic beta ansatz in higher dimensions or for non-integrable theories? So that's where this fits in a little bit into this conference, is that a lot of people here work on the thermodynamic beta ansatz, and it's going to be modeled after that. Then I'll show how to apply that to the unitary limit. And also, I think what fits into this conference to some extent is that I'll focus on this ratio of the viscosity to entropy density. And there's conjectures based, this is motivated by ADS CFT. For example, n equals 4 super J nil satisfies, saturates a bound. And the question is whether these non-relativistic gases, how close do they come to the bound? How good of fluid they are? So the motivations for this work are these are probably the simplest and most intriguing examples of interacting theories that are scale invariant, not conformal invariant because they're non-relativistic. In other words, they have a dynamical exponent z equals 2, sometimes referred to as Schrodinger symmetry. There's a lot of experimental realizations based on cold atom technology. You know, the originally cold atoms, the big news was they achieved Bose-Einstein condensation. That's become somewhat boring. Now they're looking at what's more interesting, a lot of intense experimental effort, is to study fermions, fermionic atoms. And they can tune the strength of interaction arbitrarily through the so-called Feshbach resonance. So they can you can have arbitrarily strong, repulsive, or attractive interactions. And I think the biggest groups, like the MIT group, et cetera, are mainly focused on fermions these days. Again, part of the reason is that they can reach, basically, some systems are examples of very strongly coupled superconductivity, where BCS theory doesn't work. So it's a good, well, there's lots of data, and it's a way to test various methods. These states of matter, this unitary limit, is thought to exist at the surface of neutron stars. So there's some work that was done by the nuclear physics community. And there's been quite a bit of work in the last few years about trying to find some kind of ADS CFT description because it's a scale invariant theory. Here you have to look at some kind of non-relativistic black hole solution. And, well, the situation is not quite clear. I'll give some evidence for saying, well, certainly it doesn't look like there will be an ADS CFT description precisely for this unitary limit, but there might be for some other theory. And that'll be based on the evidence for this viscosity to entropy density ratio. So the conjecture is that the viscosity divided by the entropy density in natural units is dimensionless, but the conjecture is that it's greater than this particular quantity. 1 over 4 pi in units of h bar over Boltzmann's constant. And notice that this doesn't involve the speed of light. This has the right units without the speed of light. So in principle, applies to non-relativistic systems. OK, so let me describe this unitary limit. Basically, these are very simple actions. So the simplest non-relativistic actions you could write down for either bosons, okay, so you have a non-relativistic kinetic term, and then some quartic interaction. Or if you have fermions, well, you need spin, these two components. You can write down this basic interaction here. So this is the model I'll be talking about. Okay? Quite simple. But we're going to be at strong coupling, which is what makes it interesting. So there's a fixed point. There's a very interesting RG flow. We're going to be focusing on three spatial dimensions here. Little d would always be three. It will be spatial dimension. So this is the interesting case. I'll say a little bit about the one-dimensional case and the two-dimensional case, but this is the physically interesting case. So even though you start out with positive, say, repulsive interactions, there's a fixed point at a value I'm calling G star, which is actually negative. So the fixed point corresponds to attractive interactions. And this, the unitary limit is right at that fixed point. Now, this terminology is the following, this BEC versus BCS. On this side of the fixed point, you just have your, well, let's talk about the fermionic case. You just have fermions, but they're very strongly interacting. But they can form Cooper pairs and superconduct. Mm-hmm. On the other side, there's a bound state. There's a bound state that disappears right at that fixed point. That bound state, of course, is a boson, and it can go undergo Bose-Einstein condensation. Okay, so this is the particular crossover. Bound state disappears on this side. I'll always be working on this side, so I'm not going to include the bound state in the thermodynamics. D equals 2 is somewhat interesting. Well, it's sort of the fixed point is right at 0. So it's less interesting, but you can still engineer a unitary limit, as I'll explain. So, in this D equals 3 case, basically for non-relativistic systems, the couplings really all boils down to what the scattering length is. You learn elementary quantum mechanics. And at that fixed point, the scattering length diverges. So it being diverged, because it's diverging, you have one less length scale in the problem, which was what makes the theory scale invariant. These things I've already described. On the BCS side, you can, a small coupling, of course, BCS theory works very well. But it breaks down when you get close to the fixed point where the coupling is strong. So in this unitary limit, you're strongly coupled, and there's no, typically in quantum gases, you might expand in the density times the scattering length cubed, which is dimensionless. Typically, you know, for dilute gases, this is small, and you're expanding in this parameter. But this doesn't exist anymore, because your scattering length is infinite. So you definitely need some new methods. Now, to motivate the method, and originally this was just very formal, but we were trying to mimic what is familiar to people who work on the thermodynamic beta ansatz. So let me review that. Let's just look at specifically this model. Of course, the thermodynamic beta ansatz works for any integrable model, but this model of, say, bosons, interacting bosons, is this Lieb-Lininger model. Anyway, it was solved by the beta ansatz a long time ago. The S matrix is very simple. K here are momenta, and there's a coupling, G. Right. So there's a thermodynamic beta ansatz, depends on the coupling G. The unitary limit here is not quite a fixed point here, but formally the analog of it is that, as we'll see, the unitary limit, the S matrix, always goes to minus 1. So if the coupling is infinitely strong, the S matrix goes to minus 1. And as you probably know, this turns out just to be a free fermion. So you start with bosons at infinitely strong coupling. You have an infinite repulsion. And, I mean, this is special to one dimension, but essentially these bosons, because of the strong repulsion, effectively behave as fermions. So, but it's still difficult to see. But if you started from the thermodynamic beta ansatz for this model in one dimension, it'd be absolutely clear that it's a free fermion. So on one transparency, so I think this should be familiar to many people here, this is what the beta ansatz looks like, thermodynamic beta ansatz. Basically, the free energy has a form that is the same as for a free theory. If this is a free theory, this epsilon of k would just be the one particle energy. It's a k-squared over 2n, say. But in the interacting theory, this epsilon satisfies an integral equation. This is sort of this is a TBA equation. Beta here is inverse temperature. It's an integral equation with a kernel, and the kernel is related to the log, the derivative of the log of the S matrix. So in the unitary limit, the S matrix goes to minus 1. The kernel is 0. This is just epsilon of k, just the same as a free particle, k squared over 2m, and it's a free theory. So I want to mimic this kind of description of the thermodynamics, which is very different than a non-integrable situation in higher dimensions. Standard methods involve Matsubara sums. So you look at Feynman diagrams at finite temperature. You do your Matsubara sums inside loops. And this totally entangles the perturbative expansion of the coupling with the thermodynamics. Now, what's kind of remarkable thermodynamic Ben Ansatz, it does not, it disentangles those two things. Because the S matrix here is the zero temperature, zero density S matrix. You know, you don't involve, it's not, you know, the S, you don't calculate at finite temperature and finite density. The finite temperature and density come into, through the integral equation. I can add it, shift this by mu to introduce a chemical potential. Okay, so I can control the density and the temperature. But the only data from the theory you need is the zero temperature, zero density S matrix. So that's what I'm trying to imitate. So this is how it goes. We start with focus on the occupation number. Okay, so look at the density. It's given by integral over wave vectors and some occupation number. You can sort convince yourself by making a Legendre transformation that involved between the chemical potential and the density that the free energy, there exists some functional where the free is given by, there's some functional in terms of the occupation numbers whose, if you just satisfy this variational principle, that gives you the free energy. You have to solve this equation. Of course, determine what this functional is, set equal to zero, and that gives you the physical free energy. So where are we going to start? I want to work in three dimensions. We can't use the TBA argument. The TBA argument relies on integrability that the S matrix factorizes. You know, it also involves taking a particle, moving it around the one-dimensional world, it picks up a bunch of phases. That's what these arguments aren't going to work in higher dimensions. But there is a starting point. I learned about this paper from Musardo, I think. And it's quite old, 1969, but you can derive this expression. So this Z is a partition function. Z0 is a partition function with a free theory. And it's a simple enough looking formula. It's expressed entirely in terms of the S matrix. S hat here is the S matrix operator in old-fashioned scattering theory. Okay. So it's a simple expression, but you know, at that time people were, you know, this is the time when people were trying to derive everything from the S matrix. So it was sort of just a sort of almost a pedagogical question. You know, could I formulate the thermodynamics in terms of the S matrix? And that's why they came up with this formula. But then it just stopped. Nobody went any further. This actually came before, just slightly before, Yang and Yang came up with their famous paper on the TBA for this model, actually. So we start with this, but it's quite a lot of work to get something useful out of it. Okay, but we wrote a pretty long paper. I wrote a paper myself. Another one was my student, Hao, where it was quite formal, but we learned how to make sense of this formula. And you can give a diagrammatic description of the contributions to the free energy, where these are not Feynman diagrams. They look like Feynman diagrams, similar sort of symmetry factors, et cetera, but everything else means something completely different. So in a Feynman diagram, a line is a propagator. Here it's not a propagator. It's the occupation number F. Okay. Then in this here we're taking a trace over an infinite number of the full Fock space, multiparticle Fock space. So there are contributions to this that come from, for example, two particle to two particle scattering. So there's some kind of matrix element of log of the S matrix, and two particles of two particles. There's also three particles to three particles, et cetera. So it's quite complicated. But nevertheless, the approximation we made, okay, so, and this is where people can take issue because it's not clear how well controlled this approximation is. Well, I'll try to give you some feeling for it, but suppose I just keep the two particle terms. Okay, so what I'm assuming is the gas is such that I have this picture of particles colliding, and what's most important are the binary collisions. It's still a many-body problem. We're still dealing with this as a many-body problem. In fact, there's an infinite number of diagrams, so-called foam diagrams. So I just form all contributions to the partition function based on just this vertex. There are all this infinite class of diagrams, which I'm going to sum self-consistently using this variational principle. Okay? So I am neglecting things. So in the integrable case, this three-particle contribution factorizes into two-body scatterings. So I don't expect even one dimension for this method to give exactly the TBA, but it does give the thermodynamic bit ansatz in the limit where it's the first order in the kernel, so to speak. So I'm still summing an infinite number of diagrams with a select class. In a sense, what I'm neglecting is you have this gas, you know, particles collide. I'm kind of throwing out cases where three particles all come together at the same point, which you think it might be somewhat rare. So these are expected to be the most important. Yeah? Well, it's not quite a low-density expansion. So unfortunately, I wish I was clearer on what the small parameter is here or whether there is even one. Okay. We just thought we're going to learn something with this, even though it is an approximation. And I'll show you, at the end, I'll show you data, real data, and it seems to work quite well, surprisingly well, even though I'm not at low density, really. Okay. So in one slide, this is what comes out. So it's quite a bit of work. Like I said, it was a long paper. But you can take your occupation numbers, a lot like the thermodynamic beta ansatz. Your occupation numbers take this free Dirac form. Okay, it could be bosons with different signs there, but focus on the fermionic case. Here's your occupation number. There's some energy. This pseudo-energy represents sort of a one-particle energy in the presence of all the other particles in the gas. And like in the TBA, this pseudo-energy satisfies an integral equation. It's different than the TBA equation, but in the same form. And the free energy has this form. So you just have to solve this equation, plug it into here, you have the free energy. The kernel is related to the log of the two-body S matrix. So the kernel, essentially, you take the log of this S matrix operator. Remember, the partition function involves a trace, so you take two momenta to two equal momenta, factor out delta functions in the volume, spatial volume, and that defines the kernel. So I'm going to tell you what this kernel is in a moment. So let's look at this gas now. Come back to the model. Another motivation for this method was the following. For non-relativistic theories, the two-body S matrix can be calculated exactly. This is something well known in the cold atoms, for the cold atom people, but see, where's the chalk? It's because of this. The formalism is based on the zero temperature, zero density S matrix. So diagrams, suppose I'm trying to look at scattering, diagrams that have a closed loop, such as this, are zero. Because non-relativistic. You just look at the integral over the energy inside this loop, there's both poles are in the upper or lower half plane. You can close the car toward infinity and get zero. If this was relativistic, remember the propagators have poles in upper and lower half planes. You can't close it anywhere. You always pick up something. Okay. So the only diagrams that contribute are these diagrams. The arrows here refer to, in a sense, the direction that time is going, or if you want, creation versus annihilation operators. So you can sum all these diagrams, and that is, these are the only diagrams that contribute to the S matrix, and the S matrix is exact. For higher numbers of particles, of course, it's not that simple, but for this it is. And you get something very simple. Remember, the kernel is related to the log of the S matrix. That is the S matrix. The argument of the log is the S matrix. Okay. That's a very simple dependence on, it can only depend on K minus K prime because of Galilean invariance. There's an overall factor here. There's essentially a phase factor. GR is a renormalized coupling. So there's actually a divergence in this one loop integral that you use, if you introduce an ultraviolet cutoff, and that defines a renormalized coupling. Where the fixed point is at G star is proportional to the cutoff. So the unitary limit is precisely when G is going to the fixed point, G star, and this renormalized coupling blows up. But you know, you can approach it from both sides. It either goes to plus or minus infinity. It also turns out the scattering length is just simply proportional to this renormalized coupling. You can infer that because this is the S matrix. You know, you just look up Landau-Lifschitz for the definition of the scattering length in terms of the S matrix, and you can just read it off. Actually, this should be 4 pi. But in any case, they're proportional, so the scattering length goes to infinity. So GR is going to infinity, so all you have left is this. You just have log of minus 1. So the S matrix, this is the S matrix inside here. It just goes to minus 1. But in one dimension, an S matrix is minus 1 just corresponds to fermions. It's kind of boring. Here, there's still some heavy-duty interactions going on, even though the S matrix is minus 1. So here's the flow again. I'm going to be working right here, right just to the right of this fixed point where the scattering length is minus infinity, which means infinitely attractive interactions. Now, in this limit, the kernel, unlike the TBA, the kernel has a smooth limit, and it's very simple. Okay? Remember, there's no more coupling constant in the problem. It's gone to infinity, so this kernel has a nice smooth limit, and it just depends on the difference of momenta in this way, and this leads to a scale invariant free energy and integral equation. Keep getting confused here. So I just want to mention this in passing because it was kind of fun. I mean, you could engineer a unitary limit in two dimensions experimentally. They can realize pancakes of atoms, so it might be interesting experimentally. But how would I engineer it? It's not a fixed point of the RG in the formal sense. But I could just say, where is the S matrix equals a minus 1? Okay. Actually, this occurs at very, very low energies if you're in the infinitely attractive case. So the kernel, in that case, you can recalculate your S matrix in two spatial dimensions. And the kernel just becomes, oops, the end. How did that happen? Oh, no. It's the first time I use this thing, so. Yeah, that's where I was, right? Okay. Okay. Okay, so the kernel just becomes a constant. So basically, there's still this integral equation, but because the kernel is a constant, this epsilon of k, well, the equation satisfied by the pseudo energy is just a some transcendental equation. And so that's very easy to solve, and you can do the same analysis of what we did kind of as a warm-up. And it has some, actually has some very similar features to the three-dimensional case. No, but that was the kernel in three dimensions. So the kernel in two dimensions is different. I've changed dimension, okay? I'm just pointing out that this is much more tractable analytically, and it was kind of fun to work out. And it might be experimentally relevant, but I don't want to dwell on it too much. Okay, so here are the results. So you have scale invariance. What does it imply for this gas? Well, the only energy scales are chemical potential and temperature. Equivalently, you could, in terms of length scales, it could be a thermal wavelength. In length scales would be the thermal wavelength and the length scale set by the density. But it's more natural to focus right here now on just chemical potential and temperature. So the free energy, basically, you can scale out some trivial parts. Okay, this function C, well, it's a bit analogous to the Virasoro central charge, but there's no Virasoro algebra here anywhere. But this normalization is just such that C equals 1 for a free boson. If you have a free boson, this is just a trivial function. C is just 1. This is a Riemann zeta function. So any critical point, for instance, for signifying a phase transition, has to just occur at some fixed value of this ratio, which I call x. It would be very different if this scattering length was still in the problem, right? Because there's another scaling variable. Okay, here's quite simple. So any critical point has to occur at some value of x, which is mu over t. And you can always translate that into, well, what's appropriate for bosons. For example, for boson sign condensation, is typically you write density times thermal wavelength to the third power is a constant. For B, C would be just zeta of 3/2, I think. Yeah, zeta of 3/2. For fermions, it's more natural to express things in terms of the critical temperature over the Fermi temperature. So you can translate a value of mu over T to a constant here on the right-hand side. Okay, so the most interesting case is the fermions. So, once you have, you just solve this integral equation. It's quite easy. You just solve it iteratively. Okay. And you plug it into the free energy. And there's evidence for a critical point. Okay, we made lots of plots, but I'm just going to show you a few of them. With the free energy, of course, you just differentiate with respect to temperature. You have the entropy. So here's the entropy per particle for the fermions as a function of T over TF. And you see there's a little upturn starting around 0.1. And if you take one more derivative and look at the specific heat, you see the specific heat becomes negative at that point. So at this point, the entropy starts to increase with decreasing temperature, which is unphysical. So we took that as an indication of a critical point. What is that critical point? This is fermions. This is some interacting version of BCS, strongly interacting version of superconductivity. So it occurs at a certain value of T over TF, which is about 0.1. Now, this is just for comparison, physical comparison, say BCS theory. Recoupling, the gap goes as, you know, has this exponential, e to the minus 1 over some appropriate coupling. That coupling goes to 0. The gap can be very small. So typically, in BCS theory, the ratio of the critical temperature to the Fermi temperature is 10 to the minus 5. I mean, it could be 4. It could be very small. Mm-hmm. In high temperature superconductivity, it's about 0.01. So here, this is even higher. This is consistent with Monte Carlo. They find something about 0.15. There's actually a lot of different Monte Carlo simulations. There's quite a big spread here, but this seems to be the one that is one of the most recent and the most intensive analysis, and experimentalists are getting something close to that. So this method, you know, it was approximate, seems to be working pretty well. Now let's look at this ratio of viscosity to entropy density. Here I'm going to show you a comparison with some data. So how do we calculate the viscosity? In principle, there's a harder way to do it, which is through some Kubo formula. But I'm going to take a somewhat simple-minded approach, or more heuristic approach. You can find formulas like this in elementary books like Rife and statistical mechanics. Basically, you just look at, say, in a bulk, where does the viscosity come from? If you have a velocity gradient, okay, so imagine you have a bulk and you have a plane. If there's a velocity gradient, then momentum is being transferred from one plane to the other, one side to the other. That gives rise to some force, and it gives rise to a viscosity, roughly. Okay. So you can derive this. Okay, so V bar is average speed, L is the mean free path, and N is the density. Now, the mean free path is given in terms of 1 over the density times the total cross-section. But we have the exact S-matrix. This whole formalism is based on the S-matrix. So I know the scattering amplitude and the unitary limit is just this. Okay, and the total cross-section is not a hard calculation. Total cross-section goes as 1 over k minus k prime squared. So the average of k minus k prime squared can also be related to the average speed, of course. And you then derive this formula for the viscosity. You can ignore this. This formula is for like a one-component boson. The only difference for fermions is a factor of 2 or 4. Okay, so, but you can ignore that. But it's a simple formula, basically. It goes as the average speed cubed with these vigorous normalizations. So in our gas, well, we can certainly calculate the average energy. So we know the average speed. And we can calculate the entropy. And here's the result that we get, this curve here. So the straight line is the bound, the 1 over 4 pi. So it's significantly higher by a factor of about 5. And this calculation was done about a year ago, but just less than 1 year later, there's some data by just the most recent data, just published in Science by this guy Thomas in the Duke group, and there's the data. So it's actually working quite well. They couldn't go too far. This is the lowest temperature they got, I think. But I think they went a little bit further, and they just claimed that the minimum, so there is a minimum to this ratio, and they claimed where, for us, I can just read off what it is, it's about 4.7 times the bound. The data, they claim something between 4 and 5 times the bound. So it's actually other calculations come out higher. So far, this calculation is the one that's agreeing best with some of the recent data. Now let me turn to bosons. Remember, I wrote two different actions. They have the same S matrix up to factors of 2, et cetera. So we can look in the same RG flow. So I can look at bosons. Now here, this is somewhat new. I mean, in the fermionic case, people were aware that there's a strongly coupled version of superconductivity. For bosons, it's a little more controversial, because if you have bosons with attractive interactions, in principle, they can collapse. The gas can mechanically collapse before any kind of bose-Einstein condensation. And people did studies of this for small scattering length, and that was the conclusion. But it's not clear if those arguments apply here, because we're at infinite scattering length. And if you try to extrapolate the results of these earlier works to the unitary limit, they don't seem to make much sense. So there's a chance that the gas is stable. or maybe experimentally it might be a quasi-stable state. So you have attractive interaction with bosons. Can the bose-Einstein condense? And what's the critical temperature? That becomes a natural question. And well, we found good evidence for an interacting version of bose-Einstein condensation. Now, bose-Einstein condensation is fascinating because it was the only case where there's actual a real phase transition, second-order phase transition in a free theory. Okay, but here the interactions, of course, are going to change the critical temperature. So, as I said before, we found evidence for a critical point at this value of the ratio of chemical potential to temperature that was about minus 1.3. Negative because of the attractive interactions. And we can calculate this critical density times the thermal wavelength cubed, and we get 1.325. Oops. Now, that should become, should compare that with non-interacting bosons, bose-Einstein condensation there. The critical chemical potential is zero, right? And this number is zeta of 3/2, which is about twice as high. So the effect of the interactions are quite strong. This has not been experimentally realized. Okay. And maybe it won't. Maybe the gases will collapse before you can observe this. But we think there's this pretty good evidence for this. What was the evidence? Well, standard evidence. You look at the occupation number as a function of this momentum, this dimensionless momentum, well, basically energy over temperature. And so here I'm just varying mu over T. And at this critical point, the occupation number diverges near the origin. So you have, you know, all the states are trying to get into the lowest energy state. Another signal is the compressibility, which we calculate also. The compressibility also diverges. So something's definitely going on there at that point. So I'm going to end early. That'll give Nima more time, which he usually needs. So what are the clues? So although this is an approximation, and you can take issue with it, it just seems it's TBA-like, exists. In principle, you can calculate the corrections. I think they're very, I think it's a hard calculation, but not impossible. And it seems to be giving reliable results. So as far as unitary gases, there's quite a few papers that have these non-relativistic ADS-CFT constructions on the gravity side, but they're always stuck at 1 over 4 pi. It has to do with Hawking radiation temperature. So they're always stuck at the bound. And here we're getting things that are 5 times the bound. So it's unlikely there's a ADS-CFT description of exactly this model. Right? But remember, there isn't exactly an ADS-CFT description of QCD either. And QCD isn't right at the bound. But there is this N equals 4 super Yang-Mills theory. So it's a natural question of whether, you know, is there some... is there a better... This is believed to be the most perfect fluid, by the way. You know, this ratio of 5 times the bound is really considerably... is quite low. I mean, for water, it's like 20 or something. So the natural question is there some kind of different model, a non-relativistic quantum gas, that is closer to the bound or satisfies the bound, maybe? Maybe there's some kind of supersymmetric quantum version of this model. It would be the analog of the N equals 4 supersymmetric Yang-Mills that would satisfy the bound. And that has a better chance, maybe, of having ADS-CFT description. But this is, right now, this is completely unknown. Okay. Happy to enter. So how early was it?
10 minutes.
10 minutes. Okay, good. Great.
Hi. You have this formula from an old paper from 69?
Yeah.
And then could you either comment on what is the idea which leads to this expression or on how to get from this expression to the next slide? Because you said after lots of work, can you give some more details on either how to get to the formula or how to use the formula?
Okay, well, you just take the formula, and then you start, like I said, this was, you know, 30, 40 pages, but you take the formula, and you, you're taking your tracing, but you're tracing over the multiparticle Fock space. So you know how to, you know, the resolution of the identity in the multiparticle Fock space. Okay. You have to use the cluster expansion. Remember, this is a formula for the partition function we want is log. So you have to actually use the cluster decomposition property of the S matrix to prove that the free energy is extensive. In other words, the partition function exponentiates to the volume times something. The variational principle is important. So when you look at just these two body terms, it just means that you have the free energy has a free term. Okay. Yeah, I had time. I should have shown another transparency, but I don't have it right now. there's the free term, which is there's some functional of the free energy. And it turns out, just to add the two-body interactions, you just have to add a quadratic piece. So there's a term that you add to your free energy that is just occupation number squared integrated over with the kernel. Okay. Then the variational equation, just delta free energy delta F, gives you an integral equation that I wrote down. Okay. Then there's some additional work to figure out how do you calculate the log of the S matrix. It's an operator. So you expand it in terms of the T matrix, and then you use Feynman diagrams for that.
But is this particular to non-relativistic? The formula, what you are saying
no, the, in principle, no, the formula, the formula itself is valid for relativistic theories also. It's very general. The problem with the relativistic theory is that, well, if theory is not integrable, typically you can't calculate the two-body S matrix exactly, for instance. So you're at a disadvantage there. But in principle, the method works. I mean, I checked the lowest order. It gives the right first correction to the free energy and for the relativistic, like Klein-Gordon, phi the fourth theory. But that's just the lowest order in the coupling. I can't find. I don't know the exact S matrix for the phi of the fourth theory. So there's the disadvantage for the relativistic case. That'd be interesting for sure.
Any other questions?
You compute this viscosity to entropy ratio. I understand you put the actual values of masses and temperatures, but if you change the range, can you make it as small as you want?
No, the mass cancels out.
Ah, okay. So you cannot.
It's an arbitrary. This formula, I didn't put in the value of the mass. You know, when you calculate the average, so the formula for the viscosity depended on the mass. But when you look at the entropy density, the mass cancels in the ratio. It had to, because it wouldn't be, there's nothing, it has to have dimensions of Planck's constant over Boltzmann's constant. So mass canceled out, as it had to, by dimensional analysis.
Okay, so if there are no further questions, let's thank Andre again.